Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle.
Good morning and welcome back to the Move the Needle podcast. I'm John Beckner with the National Community Pharmacists Association, and I'm joined again by my good friend Ed Cohen from Pharmacy Times. Ed, good to be with you again.
And good to be with you, John. It feels like it's been so long since we were together and able to share some updates and news on immunizations with our audience, and I'm excited to have this opportunity to be with you and just have some fun.
Absolutely, Ed. You know, this is supposed to be a slow time of year. I mean, the dog days of summer are supposed to be slow and lazy and relaxing, but that's not the case in the immunization space these days, for sure. We've got a lot of exciting things to talk about, a lot of current events that have taken place over the last, since we last spoke on our podcast. And, you know, one of those things, not totally related to immunizations, but HHS extended the COVID-19 public health emergency. What does that mean for Americans? You know, what can we say about that?
Well, John, you know, we've made that a priority. The advanced privileges that pharmacy has realized and what that means for everyone across the country. And we've spent a lot of time and energy promoting that and explaining it to our audience. And Americans can continue to utilize Medicaid benefits and telehealth services that were expanded under the public health emergency. And in addition, that does solidify, at least for the foreseeable future, technicians able to immunize for COVID and flu. And the minimum age is lowered again, I believe down to 3. So it expands privileges and gives people the opportunity to enjoy the benefits of the service that pharmacy is able to provide.
Yeah, and I think they have to give at least 60 days notice if they're going to terminate the public health emergency. So it looks like we're going to have several months at least. And again, I think one of the important things from a pharmacy and pharmacist standpoint is it's more time for the states to really take a look at making permanent some of the authorizations that have come along as a result of the public health emergency.
Well, to that point, John, and with your being on the front lines with the association, are you seeing that happening? Are you seeing that there's increased activity across the states?
There is. I mean, it's individual by state, and I think a number of states are taking steps to put into law and regulations these authorizations that pharmacists have been granted. It certainly, and we're certainly hoping for more. NCPA has a state advocacy and government affairs team, so we're monitoring that. And you know, the last thing we want to do, Ed, is take a step back to the way it was before the pandemic, because pharmacists have really proven their mettle, shown their value throughout, I guess, really the last two and a half years. So, but it's really incumbent upon the states to make sure that doesn't happen.
You know, John, there's nothing worse than having patients come to your pharmacy and you having to turn them away because we can't provide those needed services. And it's not for the reasons of choice, but because our state legislature and the boards of pharmacy were not proactive. That
exactly.
would be a terrible shame.
Exactly.
No going back, John. We must move forward. We have to really work hard to make that happen.
Exactly, exactly. So one of the important things that have happened lately is we've got a new COVID vaccine on the market.
Oh gosh, you know, I felt bad for the folks at Novavax. They got delayed so many times, and you know, they do represent an alternative for those individuals that are not wanting an mRNA vaccine. This is, as I'll quote unquote, it's more old school and traditional vaccine. I hope that patients will embrace this vaccine. Those that are hesitant today, I hope that they see this as an opportunity. And with that, John, I ask for your thoughts. Do you think that the people will embrace this, or do you think they'll just develop some new lines of excuses to avoid getting in line to roll up their sleeves?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, Ed. You know, I think we certainly hope that that people take advantage of this. I know there was a lot of resistance to the mRNA vaccines, and a lot of people expressed that was the main reason they didn't get vaccinated. So as you mentioned, this is a different platform, a different manufacturing technology. This is a protein-based vaccine, much like a lot of the other vaccines that are on the market today, and certainly an alternative option for those people that were really concerned about getting the mRNA vaccine. You know, the concern is if that was their reason, then now that reason goes away, are they going to come up with another excuse?
Yes.
So yeah. I think it's going to result in more people getting vaccinated that had not gotten vaccinated before. So that's a positive development. I think it remains to be seen exactly what that impact is going to be. But all in all, it's a positive development. It's a new era in the quiver to try to combat the COVID-19 virus. So
one of my concerning points, John, and maybe you could share if you've heard some information out in the field from your members, the Novavax vaccine, the initial shipment is 3.2 million doses.
Right.
Those will be distributed, sold to the federal government for distribution to the states. But are you hearing where that vaccine may land? What I'm hearing is that many of our pharmacies are stocked well with the current vaccine and hoping to immunize eligible patients with the vaccine in house today, and are not having the space or feel the need to bring that vaccine on site.
Yeah, I mean, that is a concern. I think a number of the independent pharmacies are planning to carry that vaccine. I've heard, as you have too. I know one of the larger chains has opted not to carry it because they believe that what they have is sufficient, and that may very well be the case. I think the states are going to elect to work with their pharmacy partners. Again, that's, you know, I like to keep pointing out that one of the silver linings of the pandemic was pharmacy and public health working together, collaborating. Yes. So I think this is probably going to be another instance of the states working with those trusted pharmacy partners that they've been working with all along, whether it's vaccines or antivirals and things like that. So, but there are, like you mentioned, there really are operational considerations here. I mean, space is limited in a lot of pharmacies, and and they may already have plenty of vaccine on board from these other sources. So,
along those same lines, John, I am a little excited, and at the same time, just as you've articulated, I am a little bit too concerned as we are hearing both the White House and the CDC embracing a new or an enhanced formulation for the COVID vaccine for the fall. So we're hearing that there may be a new formulation available end of September, early October. And then, of course, encouraging everyone, both the 50 and over and the under 50, to get a booster shot with the new formulation. Thoughts on how that is going to roll out? And have you heard additional information? And then, of course, we heard this week that flu vaccine is being approved and is starting to ship. So as you and I both know, the busy time for immunizations is once again coming upon us quickly.
Yeah, it's certainly that time of year. And I, you know, back to your first question, I think from a booster standpoint, everything that I've heard is nobody knows exactly when this new formulation is going to be available. We're hearing sometime in the fall. So if you're a patient and need a booster now, and that booster's available, I think everything I've heard is that you should go ahead and get that. And then
yes,
when the new formulation becomes available, go ahead and get that one too. It's certainly not gonna, it's not gonna be harmful to go ahead and get the booster now. It's gonna offer another level of protection, and as will the new formulation when that becomes available. You know, there's a lot to unpack with regard to the flu, and one of the flu vaccine is being shipped. In fact, it's already in certain stores. Pre-books took place back in January and February. So, so vaccine is in the stores. A lot of discussion amongst the experts about when's the best time to get the flu vaccine. I think, you know, we seem to start earlier and earlier every year, but there's been concern lately about the vaccine effectiveness waning as we move further into the year. And I, you know, I still think the sweet spot is probably September, October timeframe, particularly with the senior population, and where that immunity may wane more than the folks under the senior age.
Yes, but to that point, I'm looking and hearing you then and envisioning the intersection of the new COVID vaccine with the sweet spot for flu. And of course, we can co-administer flu and COVID in the same visit. Just one in the left arm, one in the right arm, and patients can, you know, do a one-stop shop. I know I've done it. I've separated them a week apart for my crazy bias, but no harm if you've got the time to go back to the pharmacy twice, and you'll do it. There's no harm in that, but it is encouraged that once you have your patients in the pharmacy, you work diligently to give them both those vaccines and, you know, capitalize on that visit. So end of September, into October, it looks to be a busy time. And as we're saying, if we can get all of our patients to embrace co-administration for the two vaccines, it'll make it much easier for our staff and, you know, our pharmacists and our staff to do this and be successful.
Yeah, I think one thing to point out is, you know, the CDC wasn't as clear as they probably should have been early on about co-administration. I think that point has been cleared up. And I think now most people understand that co-administration is fine. I think the public is beginning to understand that co-administration is fine with some encouragement from pharmacists. So hopefully that will go smoothly. I want to pose a couple of questions for you while we're still on the subject of flu. And, you know, I'm curious to get your thoughts about what impact COVID is going to have on people wanting to get the seasonal flu shot. I think there are probably a couple of schools of thought out there regarding that. Do you think it's going to have a positive impact? Do you think people are, you know, experiencing vaccine fatigue and they may decide to skip the seasonal flu shot this year? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I do believe that there's a lot of fatigue out there. People are just, and we see it every day when we go out. There is so little evidence that we've been through such a devastating pandemic, and people are so confident. And the only reason that they're so confident is because of the vaccine and the treatments that are available to reduce the severity of COVID and keep us, of course, out of the hospital and under the threat of really severe illness. But we are seeing that there are people with long COVID symptoms. And of course, if you get reinfected, as we're hearing today, the more times you get infected, the worse it could be for you, and you could have long lasting effects. So we are encouraging people to embrace immunizations. The flu, of course, we always talk about flu vaccine. You get it to protect yourself, but more importantly, you're getting it to protect those around you. If you're going to embrace vaccines, as I said earlier, the co-administration, getting in there, getting a flu and a COVID shot, even though they're two separate entities, I think it's important that they do that. You know, unfortunately, the traditional manufacturing number is enough vaccine for flu to immunize just over half the population. So, you know, even if we get 180 million doses, which I think we saw 2 years ago, and maybe last year as well, that's still not enough to immunize everyone. And there is that apathy out there that, well, you know, I'll be fine. One of the real positives that came out of COVID is the fact that we had a lot of younger patients come to the pharmacy for their COVID testing and their immunizations, not realizing the value that pharmacy can offer to them. And we're hoping that they remember that pharmacy can offer and does provide these services, and that they'll come back proactively. The 19 to 64 year olds come back proactively, even without the need for prescription items or treatment for chronic disease, and come to the pharmacy and get taken care of. Because of course we know the best prevention is your vaccine to help save lives and reduce illness.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think pharmacies have done a really good job of immunizing the senior population. In fact, I think most seniors get their influenza vaccine in the pharmacy. But I think the real opportunity is, like you say, in that 19 to 64 group that has really become normalized to getting vaccines at the pharmacy. They did so during COVID. They came in, they got their original series, they got boosted. So they're used to coming to the pharmacy to get vaccines. So I think that might help us this year. I think another thing maybe that could be conspiring against folks getting the influenza vaccine this year is that we experienced a pretty light year last year. So the vaccine fatigue that we've talked about combined with a relatively light flu season last year might conspire against this. But, you know, everything that we're hearing is that this could be a tough year. We monitor what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere, and by all accounts, it's a tough flu season down there. I think the World Health Organization and the FDA monitor, I guess, probably more than 80 sites, and they've got a pretty good, that's a pretty good barometer in terms of what's going to happen here during the upcoming flu season. So hopefully folks are paying attention to that and we'll come in and get vaccinated.
Well, you know, we're seeing so much uptick in COVID cases now.
Yeah.
And we're all outside. Doors and windows are open, even though it's a little warm out there. We do get the opportunity to get out and get fresh air, but yet cases are still increasing. Can you imagine when we all go back inside? And with the confidence we have today about getting together and not masking or social distancing, and then you add flu into the mix, I think it's going to be a double whammy there.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that. Yeah. And I can't emphasize enough to all those that I know and in my circles that they really need to think long, think hard, and get into the pharmacy and get those shots.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned earlier is, you know, you the reason for getting the flu shot is not only to protect yourself, but to protect those around you, your friends and loved ones. And I'll give a plug to an organization that we're working with at NCPA, and that's a group called Families Fighting Flu. And the group was actually formed by folks that had lost loved ones to the flu. And so there's that group is very much focused on everyone in the family getting an influenza vaccine to protect against the flu. So, you know, to your point about, you know, wanting to protect everyone, it's really important for everyone in the family, you know, older adults, you know, middle-aged folks, adolescents, and kids to get that protection. And now that pharmacists are really able to immunize, currently down to age 3, I think it's even more of an opportunity for pharmacists to play a role here.
Well, I think we need to utilize organizations, as you speak about, as well as our technology and social media. I think social media and the use of technology services that we're now, we have embedded in our pharmacy fulfillment systems. They're all talking. The systems are talking and being able to message every patient that's been to the pharmacy for an immunization. We're able to reach out and message them and let them know what they're due for, what's available, and of course, come the fall, be able to get them back into the stores for flu and COVID. So, technology and social media is such an important way to market today.
No question about it. Much, much, much different than when you and I got started. There was no social media.
Yeah, we used those printed flyers that came out advertising the grocery store every Wednesday, and somewhere buried on page 4 at the bottom, there was a little pharmacy box. Hey, we have flu shots today.
Well, you know, Ed, you know, we laugh about that, but it worked.
It did. Worked
at that point in time. So,
yep.
You know, thankfully we've moved beyond that and are much more sophisticated in terms of our marketing. Hey, before we move off of the flu subject, I wanted to, another positive development that has occurred over the last month is the ACIP recommendation for high dose for people over the age of 65.
Yes. That's it. For the first time, they're starting to differentiate the flu vaccines and really like take a stand and make it so that folks I've been getting high dose for a couple of years now, and I'm very happy to hear that the CDC is latched on to that and embracing it and promoting it and making it a positive that the senior population get that extra level of protection. It's so important.
Yeah, and you know, I think that the ACIP recommendation is really a big deal. As you mentioned, you've been getting that particular vaccine. I think pharmacists have been doing a really good job of recommending the high dose for people over the age of 65. But now that we have I guess for lack of a better word, the official stamp of approval from the CDC. I think, first of all, I think more seniors are going to be asking for it. I think they already are asking for it, but even more so.
Yes.
And more pharmacies will make sure that they have that particular vaccine on hand, because it's, I think it's four times as potent.
Yes, it is.
as the regular flu vaccine. And, you know, the only concern would be making sure that there's enough supply in the pipeline to be able to satisfy all the needs of the seniors. And I've been told there's plenty of vaccine. There won't be a supply problem this year. So I think that's another really positive development.
I'm excited that you brought that up, because you know, it is important. It's gone are the days that you just come to the pharmacy and it's September, October, and you just blanketly state, I'm here for my flu shot. That patients will be taking a more involved and be more interested in what they're actually receiving. And here's the first step in that direction to make sure that patients know and understand.
So Ed, I'm going to ask you to put your operations hat on. And, you know, during COVID, a lot of pharmacies, in fact, most pharmacies provided COVID vaccines on an appointment basis. Before that, I think most pharmacies provided immunizations on a walk-in basis, although, you know, they've always done clinics either on-site or off-site at employer groups. How do you think things are going to play out this year with regard to, you know, people continuing to, or pharmacies continuing to administer COVID vaccines, but also trying to handle the crunch of influenza vaccines along with that?
Well, great question, John. Thank you. I do believe that the appointment-based model is going to grow. Just being able to manage workflow within the store and the pharmacy. I also believe that you'll see a lot of immunization days or clinics that pharmacies will be offering. So instead of folks just blanketly coming to the store, walking in, they'll have opportunities for, of course, employers are embracing this, but other organizations, community groups, senior centers, even public health will embrace pharmacy and collaborate to create these clinic moments where for 2, 3, 4 hours on an afternoon, an evening, or a morning, flu vaccine and flu and COVID will be offered, and you'll be able to easily and conveniently immunize the masses. I think for the store, and in, of course, every conversation focuses on a little bit of the burnout and the angst that our staff has suffered from, in order to manage that and keep them at ease, we need that appointment-based model. We're not going to discourage the walk-ins, but we are going to promote heavily the clinic days and the appointment-based model. And of course, when folks come into the store, that those two events will minimize the walk-in traffic and make it more manageable. But I don't believe they're going to turn people away. There might be a little bit of a wait for walk-ins,
right?
But I think you're going to see a little bit of everything this year, John.
You know, really no different from a from a reservation at a restaurant. I mean, obviously the reservations are going to take priority, but you know, most restaurants have, you know, accept, you know, walk-ins and people that are just showing up. They try to work them in. So I think that's probably what's going to happen with pharmacy. You know, another consideration, if the pharmacy is immunizing young children, I know pharmacies that do that. Some have elected to just immunize children on certain days to try to segregate those from the general population, both from a crowd control standpoint, but also from a safety standpoint in terms of the different types of vaccines that are available.
Yes, I've read about that, and we've talked about that here as well. That they are patients, but they're special patients. They do have special needs, and there's a lot of special care that needs to be provided to our smaller patients, our younger patients. So we really have to be cognizant of that. And having those special days, I think it's very helpful too. And parents will be much more receptive to bring children if they know it's a day dedicated to children. I think you'll find that you'll create more awareness, and you'll create more comfort for parents to bring their children in to the pharmacy. We're getting to the end of our conversation, but we'd be remiss not to just spend a minute or two to talk about the latest entry into the pandemic world. We've all heard that monkeypox is at or near a pandemic level. What have you heard, John? And, we have a vaccine out there, pharmacies not directly involved, but I'm sure we're getting calls at the counter for people inquiring about monkeypox. It's concerning. Thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a couple of thoughts about it. It's certainly an additional thing to be concerned about. I think you correct me if I'm wrong. There are currently, 4,000 cases across the country, or is it more than that? I can't.
Well, it grows every day. So, I think the number is going to be bigger going forward.
It's going to be bigger. It's currently, primarily in a particular demographic. I think, those things tend to move beyond that demographic, as time goes on, and that's impacted by, social determinants of health. There is a vaccine. There are actually a couple of vaccines. One is primarily for smallpox, and there are a couple of vaccines that are available. One is Jynneos, and that's going to be the most viable option. I think there are about 300,000 doses that are currently available. It's being managed through the National Strategic National Stockpile and being shipped to the states for distribution. The pharmacy community has not been engaged as a whole yet, just because of probably the relatively small number of cases and the relatively small supply of vaccine. So state health departments and jurisdictions are working with the pharmacies with that, although most of the doses to date have been distributed through health systems and clinics.
Yes.
So I think that could change as more cases develop. There are a number of challenges with that distribution model. It's not the same model as we've come to expect with the COVID vaccine. So from the standpoint of data use agreements and reporting to the IIS, there have been some challenges to date because of the method of distribution that's been chosen. So I think more to come on that. There's another vaccine that's available, but it has a lot of side effects and is probably would be used as a last resort. And that's the vaccine that was used for smallpox. It's a different type of administration. It's not your typical IM administration. It's a number of punctures, and that's got a lot of challenges. So I would say more to come on monkeypox.
Well, I think that from a pharmacy perspective, we should be aware, and we should do our research understanding that it's classified as a mild self-limiting disease. And when patients are calling, there are some antivirals that physicians are using. There is the vaccine, as you've described, John. And right now, from a pharmacy perspective, we'll assist our patients in treating, helping them to realize and self-treat through the use of over-the-counter and some prescription items. The symptoms of the disease, of course, the lesions, and then similar to shingles, these lesions do have a lot of pain, and patients need to know what they can take and what they should take or could take to alleviate that pain.
Yeah, and I think you know, just to add on to that, Ed, you're exactly right. You know, I've heard it described as I don't want to minimize this, but I've heard it described as an outbreak of measles or chickenpox, and
yes,
we need to treat it accordingly. I think the important thing is that pharmacists will be ready if called upon and if needed.
Thank you for listening to Move the Needle. We'll see you next time for another valuable episode surrounding immunization services.